week. So we've actually learned a lot about the algebra from n equal 4 gauge theories, in particular this SU2/2 cross SU2/2 super algebra tells us a lot about n equals 4. Okay. We know the dispersion relation. We know the S matrix up to the dressing phase just based on this algebra. We put in a little more information like crossing symmetry. Then we can find solutions to the Yannick's equation. There's many solutions, but one in particular, of course, is the one that we believe is correct. And then everything goes from there, Y system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I wanted to talk about is asking a question about how do these structures show up when you do Feynman diagram calculations. So some of you are probably thinking, why in the heck would we ever want to do Feynman diagram calculations? And I guess the answer to this is that, well, not every theory we consider is n equals 4. So that would be my answer. So if we look at the Feynman diagrams, okay, in components, okay, if you do one loop, two loop, three loops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, seeing all this come out, and basically we can only see a few orders, loop orders come out because that's all we can do, it seems basically a miracle that it all works out. Now, of course, really it's not a miracle. Underlying it is this algebra, but it's not immediately obvious from the Feynman diagrams that this algebra is there. However, if you do the calculations using superspace diagrams, okay, it's still sort of a miracle, but it doesn't be quite the same amount of miracle. So maybe enough to become beatified but not become a saint. I don't know. But in any case, superspace seems somewhat better organized, which has some particular structures that I want to talk about. So in this talk, I'll only be concerned with certain structures in these diagrams that occur in the dispersion relation. So for the most part, the S matrix is not going to play a role in this talk today. But bear with me on that. And basically what I want to do is state a possible relation, which is an all-loop relation for classes of supergraphs. And it's based on a three-loop calculation of Christoph Sieg that he did last summer. Now, we all know in this game that people can definitely get into trouble making higher loop predictions based on diagrams. So that's happened more than once. Bad news happens at four loops, or good news, depending on how you look at it. But certain things happen at four loops, so one has to be careful. So in any case, then we could also ask, while these structures are important for n equals 4 super Yang-Mills that you find in these supergraphs, you might ask then, well, is n equal 4 super Yang-Mills important for these structures? Okay. And in other words, can we apply these to other superconformal field theories? And I will give an example of that in this talk. Okay, so the outline is I'll give you some relevant facts, okay, bare bones facts about superspace. Basically, it will mainly be pictures. The main thing to do is keep track of what a picture is. We won't really say, I'll state what the Feynman rules are, but I won't go through the technical details of how you go from Feynman rules to getting a number out. Okay, and we will basically relate the dispersion relation, the n equal 4 dispersion relation, to classes of superspace graphs. Okay, and we will apply the superspace calculations to a particular branch of the Lie-Strassler deformations, which, for lack of better words, and this is actually a terrible name, and I'll explain later, the cubic Lie-Strassler model. And then we'll discuss certain things in this model. So some things that are called planar protected states, certain sorts of states that appear, and how to compute their anomalous dimensions to lower loop order. Then I'll discuss something that happens for these types of theories where you have to start tuning the couplings. And then talk about, well, some possible, if time permits, about something about a Hagedorn transition. Okay, so why use superspace? Okay, so let me give you an example by reminding you of a certain calculation that you do in one loop n equals 4. Okay, so when Kosti and I wrote this paper a while ago, okay, when we needed to compute, to find the one loop contribution to the dilatation operator in the modern language, we didn't call it that then, okay, we basically had to compute three diagrams. Okay. Now, if you do this calculation in superspace, okay, you only have to compute one diagram. Okay. Now, going from three to one doesn't seem like a big savings, especially in order to compute this diagram, you basically have to plow through 1,001 lessons in superspace, which is not the best book in the world to read, but it's certainly very accurate. Okay, so it's not really clear if the cost to the benefit is really worth it. It's faster just to compute three different diagrams. However, this one diagram comes with a particular structure called the chiral function. Okay. So if you do this computation in superspace, you find that it's the 2 times g squared, where g squared is defined in this way. There's 5 different ways of defining g squared in our community now, but I define it this way, times this chiral function chi 1. And in this case, chi 1 is just 1 minus the nearest neighbor exchange summed over all the sites. Okay, so this chi 1 is going to appear throughout this talk. And if you want to remember what chi 1 is, it sort of looks like a headless human, okay, with the head chopped off. Okay, so remember that this sort of structure will appear throughout this talk. Now, so a more general definition of the chiral functions, and this is the definition that applies for n equals 4. In other theories, we'll have different definitions of a chiral function. Okay, it's basically given by n integers, n positive integers, where each integer goes with the nearest neighbor, 1 minus the nearest neighbor exchange, multiplied together and then summed over all the sites. Okay, they have a couple of useful properties. So the first useful property, and these properties are not specific to n equals 4, okay, is that if you have 2 adjacent indices and they differ by 2 or more, then you can switch their order and you have the same chiral function. And you can go back and see that that's obvious because of these exchange elements inside there. The other useful property is that if 2 indices are the same, okay, then, this 1 minus p is basically projective. Okay, so you basically you're taking a 1 minus p squared. We don't have the half in front of it. So we end up with a factor of 2 here. So if the 2 indices are the same, okay, and we'll refer to this as a reduction of this chiral function. Okay, and then we're going to discuss a certain class of chiral functions called connected. And a chiral function is connected if all of the indices differ from their neighbors by plus or minus 1. Okay, so we'll call that a connected chiral function. So the claim is that every supergraph is proportional to a definite irreducible chiral function. So irreducible once we make these identifications, once we, you know, reduce these things so that all the indices are different. Okay, so let me now say how these chiral functions can show up in the spin chain. All right, so let's consider the one magnon state. Okay, so the one magnon state, we have a bunch of X's. Okay, these are going to be these are chiral fields. And we have one Y situated at point J. Okay, and we multiply by e to the IPJ. And we know that to all loop order, the energy of this state, assuming that this thing is infinitely long, so there's no wrapping, is this expression right here, 1 plus 16 G squared sine squared P over 2 minus 1, the famous dispersion relation. Okay, so let me take this EP here and put it in front of the state P, okay? And if I do that, you realize that 4 times sine squared P over 2 is the same as chi 1, okay? So I can put that inside I'll get rid of that sine squared P over 2 times 4, put that in the square root, subtract off the 1, and put this in front of the state P. And then I'll expand the square root, and what you end up with is this expansion term like here, multiplied by a product of chi 1's, and the C down here means that you just take the connected products, okay? So because if they're unconnected, they won't contribute to the one magnon state, so we'll throw them out. We'll only keep the connected ones. Okay, so we can see what this means to multiply a chi 1 together. Let's just take this simple example of just 2 of them. Okay, so here I have 2 headless humans. Okay, so the first one, the left leg of one is on the right arm of the other. This one, both legs are on top of both arms, and this one, it's the opposite of this one. And so this first one is a chi 2-1 structure. The second one is a chi 1, comma 1, but that's the same as 2 chi 1. And then the last one is plus chi 1, 2. Then what we can do is we can resum this. And if you resum, then you find that you get a sum of connected chiral functions, each multiplied by some function of g squared, where the function only depends on how many indices are in each chiral function. So f1, there's only one with f1, so f1 g squared chi 1, f2 g squared. There's two with 2, there's these with 3, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and if you plug this into Mathematica, this is what Mathematica spits out for you. It's a hypergeometric function. But really, every one of these things obviously must be algebraic. Okay, so every one of these expressions is algebraic, but it's just more convenient to write it this way. Okay, now there's a caveat. And the caveat is that we're looking at a particular one-magnon state. Okay, we're in the SU2 sector. And in the SU2 sector, okay, there's identifications of chiral functions. Okay, this is well known for a long time. And the thing is, if you have three adjacent indices where the middle one, where the two outer ones are the same and the middle one differs by plus or minus one, then that's the same as just getting rid of the last two indices. So it reduces this way. But this is true in the SU2 sector, but it's not necessarily true for all chiral functions. But the ones we're considering here, this is the case. Okay, so now let's take a little sidetrack into computing Feynman diagrams using superspace. And we want to see something about how these chiral functions will show up. Okay, so we're in n equal 1 deformation. So we have three chiral fields, x, y, and z, or we can label them by phi i, 1 to 3. And we have vector superfields, v. We have propagators. Okay, so basically you can forget about this stuff out here. Okay, if it's chiral propagator, it's a line. If it's a vector propagator, it's a wavy line. Forget about the rest of it. Okay, and then we have vertices. So we have chiral vertices. So we have three chiral fields coming in. They meet at a trivalent graph here. Okay, and there are these fermionic derivative terms that sit on these guys. The main thing to note about these fermionic derivatives for the purposes of the talk is that you only need the fermionic derivatives, or the squares of these derivatives, only appear on two of the three legs. Okay, and then they come with some couplings. The couplings depend on what the particular theory is. This circle here means the order in which you trace the color indices. Okay, so if we're talking about n equals 4, then these GIJKs, it's just the Yang-Mills coupling times epsilon IJK. And we can then have anti-chiral vertices. So for the three anti-chiral fields coming in, instead of having d bar squareds, we have d squareds. And we raise the indices on these couplings in that way. Then we can also have vector with chiral and anti-chiral fields. So we can have one vector coming in. We can have two vectors coming in. We can have two that cross. And actually, you can have infinitely many vectors coming in. We do not want to go to West-Semino gauge where you break supersymmetry. Okay, so that means we can have arbitrarily large numbers of these guys coming in. Okay, but for us, for what we're going to do here, we don't care about that. Okay, so one other rule to remember is that a chiral vertex cannot be connected directly to another chiral vertex. It can only be connected to an anti-chiral vertex. Okay, because of the way the propagators go from phi to phi bar. Okay, so you can only go chiral to anti-chiral. You can't go chiral-chiral. Okay, and then we also have the chiral operators, the operators in our theory that we want to compute the anomalous dimensions for. Okay, and so these guys we can also think of as being like a chiral vertex. Okay, we have a bunch of fields in our operator. We're going to say, for example, the single trace operator up here with an x, some y's, and z's. Okay, we could also put in w alphas. Okay, and so if I have phi i's and w alphas, this is the SU2/3 sector in n equal 4. Okay, but we're only going to consider the scalar ones for today. Okay, so we can have various different fields in that, and we can represent this operator as a chiral vertex. Okay, so all the legs coming out of the vertex come with this d bar squared on it, except for one of them. Okay, just like in the trivalent vertex as before. Okay, so then we put everything together, and we do a computation. And what we compute is we want the dilatation operator for this particular thing, and we write this in as an expansion in g squared. So the leading term is just the number of chiral fields inside here. It's just the bare dimension of this field, so that's L. Okay, the first loop correction, okay, this chi 1, okay, so this is one loop. You can see there. This, remember, is a chiral vertex. This is the operator. So this must be anti-chiral. This is chiral. And then we have the two fields coming out. We go to two loops, okay, you find that you get a chi 1 2, a chi 2 1, and a chi 1. And basically, the higher loop order you go, you can have chiral functions up to that loop order plus chiral functions of lower loop order. Okay, so let's go to three loops. And let's see what happens there. So the prediction for three loops was made many years ago by all three members that are in this audience, I think. Yep, they're all three here. Okay, and it was based on integrability. They didn't write it this way, but if you write it in terms of chiral functions, okay, you can write it this way, okay, chi 1, 2, 3 plus its conjugate. Then you have a chi 1, 2 and a chi 2, 1, and then 24 times chi 1. This part here in blue, this chi 1, 3, that also appears. It must be there by integrability. Okay, but this is not connected. Okay, so we won't worry about it for the most part. So that's not a connected cut because the two indices differ by more than one. Neighboring indices differ by more than one. All right, so this is consistent with this fn g squared. Once we remember that chi 1, 2, 1 is equivalent to chi 2, 1, 2, which is equivalent to chi 1 in the SU2 sector. Okay, so you can go back and plug in what these functions are. You can find that that's equivalent to having 24 times chi 1. Okay, so last summer, Christoph actually did the field theory calculation for this. And so let me just go through some types of graphs. Okay, so the main thing to note about these graphs is that all of these graphs here are chi 1 chiral functions. Okay, there's one headless human, okay, in each one of these graphs. And all of these are three loops, okay? So here's a loop here. We have some vectors here. And this thing couples to the neighboring guy. A neighbor that doesn't connect to anything, you can just think as multiplying by one. Okay, so these are all three loop graphs, and they all come with a chi 1 chiral function. And you sum them up, and you find that this D3 coming from this one, from these chi 1s, is 16 chi 1. And then there are these graphs, okay? And this one right here, this is a chi 1, 2, 1. Okay, so you have one headless human, then another one standing on his arm, and then another one standing on their arm, or going the opposite way. You do the superspace calculation for this, and you find that this is 4 chi 1, 2, 1 plus 4 chi 2, 1, 2. So 16 plus 4 plus 4 is 24. Not surprisingly, it works. However, the other thing you notice is that if you take this chiral function and you cube it and take the connected part, okay, you get 4 times chi 1 plus all these connected terms here plus chi 1, 2, 1 plus chi 2, 1, 2. So in other words, the supergraphs exactly split up in the same way as this chi 1, 3 works. Okay, and all the other terms match like this. Okay. So one has led to conjecture that the all-loop sum of supergraphs with the connected chiral function like this is given by this. Okay, it's given by this function fng squared times these chi 1s. Okay, so as we know, if any of you had any money invested in the stock market last week, you know that it's a good idea to hedge your bets, so maybe plus some transcendental terms. Okay, it's true up to three loops, but we're not certain if this would be true beyond him. Okay, so so anyways, this is a statement about supergraphs. Okay, so it can be applied outside the SU2 sector where you no longer have this equivalence between these chiral functions. Okay, it does not directly require n equals 4 supersymmetry. We used n equals 4 supersymmetry to sort of see this structure, but we didn't actually need it. Once you actually physically do the calculation, okay, it doesn't it doesn't directly play a role. So that means we can apply it to different n equal 1 superconformal theories with different chiral functions. OK, so let me just say a few things about what's happening in at for loops and higher. OK, so for example, this chi 1, 2, 1, 2, this is equivalent to chi 1, 2. And this is what the supergraph would look like. And it's not too hard to do this calculation. You can see it's consistent with the conjecture. In fact, there's a whole class of diagrams like this, an infinite number of these that are consistent with it. But let's not go on. Then there's this. OK, so there's 15 graphs like this, and that where you have sort of looks like a vertex correction here. This would be the chi 1, 2, 1 structure. And there's 25 graphs altogether. Now, believe it or not, the first 23 are not bad. Okay, but these last two are real bears, so we don't actually sure what the result is. So it looks like definitely the rational part is right, but we can't tell if all the transcendental pieces cancel off. Lots of them cancel off, but we can't tell if they all do. But anyways, even if the conjecture is not right, I want to stress one thing we should stress, that even if it's not right, if you know, say, what the chiral instruction is, what the contribution is of chi 1, 2, 1 at for loops, then you know what chi 1 is, okay, based on the dispersion relation. And so we can use that information to figure out what chi 1 is. So if I go back to this, so while this looks terrible, okay, this is almost done, okay, and once we do this, then we know chi 1. And chi 1 is absolutely terrible to calculate. You don't want to calculate this. So we can learn what chi 1 is just by knowing what this chi 1, 2, 1 is. Okay, so now I want to apply this to some theories. And so the theories I want to talk about are a particular class of Lee Strassler deformations. So the sort of modern way of writing this, and I guess this is the official way because this is the way it appeared in the review that came out in December. Zubos, this is the way he wrote it, so more or less, let's just say this is the official way of writing everything since half the audience members were authors of this review. So anyways, we'll write it like this. So these are all cubic terms. We have an overall coupling kappa in front here. We have another coupling Q that fits in front of here, and then we have a third coupling H over 3 that fits in front of these. Okay, so Lee and Strassler argued that based on the symmetry of this super potential, all the anomalous dimensions of the three chiral fields must be equal. And for the theory to be superconformal, it's obviously classically superconformal because the dimension of everything here is 3. Okay, but for the full quantum theory to be superconformal, all of the anomalous dimensions of the three chiral fields have to be 0. But since it has this structure, they're all equal to each other. Okay, so you basically have three complex parameters and basically one complex condition that they have to satisfy in order to be superconformal. Okay, so at the lowest, for the first few loop orders, and if you're in the planar limit, okay, the relation between the couplings is that G Yang-Mills squared is given by this combination of couplings here. Now, this is exact in the planar limit if we set H equal to 0 and Q is e to the I minus I 2 pi beta, where beta is real, so this is the beta deformation. And there's actually some other cases, too, where discrete values of these, shown by Monson and Zubos, where you can go, and also Budznik also, where you can go from one of the theories where H is not equal to 0 to one of these beta deformed theories like this. Okay. But for the most part, it's this class of theories where this is for loop, where this is true to all loop orders. Otherwise, there'll be a for loop correction, okay, to this expression. So I want to consider what I'll call the cubic model. And one reason I want to consider this is because it has nice chiral functions. Okay, and so first of all, it's terrible to call this cubic because, well, the whole thing is cubic anyways. So, but I'll call it cubic. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to set kappa to 0, take h to infinity such that h hat, which is kappa times h, is left finite. So basically all I'm left with is this term here. I don't have these terms here. So you can see then that this relation then sets h hat equals to the square root of 2 times g yang mills plus for loop corrections. And we'll discuss the corrections in a bit. Okay, so one reason that I believe that this is sort of interesting, this model, is that it has something called lots of planar protected states. Okay, so since we're cubic, okay, so we just have these three superpotential terms here. The chiral vertices either have XXX, YYY, or ZZZ. Now, one thing you know about superspace diagrams, and this has, and this doesn't really depend on what particular theory you're considering, is that if you have a bunch of superspace diagrams, and and all of the legs are only connected to the other legs with vector propagators. Okay, so they're not connected with chirals. So here's an example. Okay, so here's an anti-chiral vertex and a chiral vertex, but it only is connected within the same leg. Okay, it turns out all these graphs are finite. Okay, so they do not contribute to the anomalous dimension of these operators. So suppose I take the following operator. I take xy, xy, blah, 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 basically such that all neighbors are different. Okay, so if we're taking the large n limit, then there's no way for the neighbors to connect to each other. Okay, in order for an x to connect with another x, it has to cross over a y, so that's a non-planar contribution. So that means all of these operators that I can write down have zero anomalous dimension, okay, in the planar limit, because they cannot be connected with chiral vertices. So what then does that mean? Well, if you count the number of these operators then, basically it should run as 2 to the L divided by L. Okay, basically you can easily see where that comes from. If you have one particular site is an X, that means the next site you have two choices for that one. The next site has two choices, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and we divide by an overall factor of L because, you know, we have to symmetrize over all the positions. Okay, so there's an exponential growth in these number of states. Okay, so it suggests that this gravity dual for this system is very strange, perhaps stringy in nature. And it's possibly because you do know that if you start from n equal 4 and you start deforming, the gravity dual ends up deforming the S5 and turning on fluxes and things like that. And probably this particular case we're considering might be some singular limit in that place. So you can have singularities, in which case, if you're talking about a string theory, the strings can wrap around the singularities and be relatively short, and so be relatively low mass states. Something like that. We don't know. It's not known what the gravity dual is for this. Now, and again, to stress that these are only protected in the planar limit. Okay, once you go out of the planar protected limit, okay, then these things do get anomalous dimensions. So these are not what you would call chiral, these are not absolutely, you know, these are not chiral primaries in that sense. Okay, and then another set of states you can consider are what we call one-paired and multi-paired states. So in the case of one pair, we have all the guys are different except for two of them, two neighbors are the same. Okay, so if you compute what the chiral function is for these particular states, then you find that chi 1 is equal to 2, and L. Yeah. The superpotential has to have dimension 3. No, it's still in the deformation. You mean quartic in the super. Yeah, it's not there. The permutation, if I go back, the permutation, okay, so the permutation comes from this guy right here. This is what permutes it. So I have an XYZ minus a, so set Q, okay, so N equals 4 has Q equal 1, okay, and H equals 0. Okay, so this, so if we have an XY going in, and I go back, you see? Okay, well, let me just for everyone. Okay, so if I go to this graph here, I have an XY coming in, then I can have a Z coming out, and then I can have an XY coming out here or minus YX coming out over here. So, So there's no permutation. Okay, so let's say I just have one pair of these states. Then the Cargill function is just chi 1 is 2, okay, and then all the other ones are 0. Okay, in particular, chi 1, 2, 1 is equal to 0. Okay, so in SU2 sector, chi 1, 2, 1 was the same as chi 1. Now that's no longer the case. Okay, we have multi-paired states where we have, you know, we have pairs together, okay, but they're not different pairs, you know, that they're separated, or if they're next to each other, they're different chiral fields. Okay, then the chi 1 is equal to 2 times the number of pairs, and these chi 1s are equal to 0 if we have this condition, if aj minus aj plus 1 is equal to 1, and then others are 0 depending on how far apart the pairs are. Okay, now the pairs are fixed in position because, as Pedro was saying, there's no exchange, and so if there's no exchange, there's no hopping. Okay, so there's no mixing of these operators. Okay, so you can actually go and compute them. Okay, so, and if we have sets of pairs and they're separated by n sites, then their interactions between the pairs start showing up at n plus 2 loop order. So, for example, in this case here where they're next to each other, okay, this will first, these guys will start first interacting with each other at 3 loops. So anyways, we can compute the anomalous dimensions, the 3 loop order for every one of these things, just using the n equals 4 dilatation operator. Okay? But now we have to sort of split up that dilatation operator into the chi 1 and the chi 1, 2, 1, because the chi 1, 2, 1 gives us 0. So instead of having a 24 here, I have a 16. Okay? And this then gives us this. And then the anomalous dimension for this thing is the number of pairs times this function, this combination of terms here. And then if we have nearest neighbor pairs, NPP, the number of nearest neighbors, we get a subtraction term coming from this chi 1, 3 term here. Okay? So in a sense, we know this many states, we know their anomalous dimensions exactly up to 3 loop order. So in that sense, this is more solvable than n equal 4. Not really, but okay. But if you've ever tried to solve beta functions with more than 2 roots, you might agree with that statement. You might not, though. Okay, so let me then say a few more. How much time do I have? About, according to my watch, I have 12 minutes. Okay. Okay, 15 minutes. Okay, so... Let me say something about 4 loops. And I'll actually say something about, let me say something about 4 loop correction first. Okay, so first of all, why is there a 4 loop correction in these theories? Well, let's first see why we get this factor of h hat squared is equal to 2 g n mil squared. Okay, so what we want is, in order for this theory to stay super conformal, the anomalous dimension of the z's and z hats, okay, the anomalous dimension of the chiral primaries, the chiral fields, has to be 0. Okay, and so what happens in n equals 4 then is if you compute this graph, you find out that you find you have this one loop contribution coming from this, plus a one loop contribution coming from vector exchange. Okay, and so you know it cancels in n equals 4. So what you can do is just compare this graph in the n equal 4 theory with the same graph in the cubic and see what the difference is. And the difference is that in the n equal 4 case, you can either have, when you have a z coming in, you can have an x up here and a y down here, or you can have a y up here and a z and an x down here. So there's 2 possibilities. In the cubic case, there's only 1 possibility. You can only have z's inside here. Okay? So to compensate for that, since we have 2 vertices here, okay, we have to make h hat squared equals to 2 times g angle squared. So that's where that comes from. And remarkably, or it seems sort of remarkable to me, this holds up to 4 loops. Okay, but once you get to 4 loops, then you run into a graph like this. Okay, and so this is a 4 loop graph. And if you count the possible different ways of assigning the flavors of the chiral fields inside here, in the n equal 4 case, you find that there's 8 ways of assigning things. Okay, but now we've already set h hat squared is equal to 2 g yang mil squared. So in the cubic model, we'll pick up a factor of 16, since there's 8 vertices there. Okay, so now there's a mismatch. And since there's a mismatch, okay, the infinities don't cancel, okay, and we're left with a diverging graph. So then what you have to do is you have to tune the coupling. And so to compensate, what you do is you add a small bit to the coupling, okay, and so that with this small bit then will go back down and affect the one loop calculation. Okay, but it's not just the straight cancellation of infinities, because you're trying to cancel the anomalous dimension coming from a one loop graph with the anomalous dimension coming from a for loop graph. And so if you do dimensional reduction, okay, if you do the one loop graph, okay, you're going to come with a factor of mu squared to the epsilon, okay, plus some coefficients that you can compute. Doesn't matter what they are. If you do this for loop graph, you're going to come with a mu squared to the 4 epsilon. Okay, and the anomalous dimension you want to set to 0. So you take the derivative with respect to mu of log mu, and you set this equals to 0. And so this brings down a factor of 4 compared to this. And so in order to cancel the anomalous dimension, okay, then you have this B over A. You have that delta H bar has to be this combination right here. Okay, but that doesn't cancel the divergence. Okay, because you're saying now that this term is 4 times as big as this term. Okay, so we actually also have to add a counter term to cancel the divergence. Okay, so you have to go in and muck around with the Lagrangian and add a counter term to cancel the divergence. Okay, so you have to do two things. You have to sort of tune this coupling, and then you have to put in a counter term to cancel it. Okay, so let's look then what happens then in the for loop correction to the anomalous dimension. Okay, so we have the same sorts of things. So this would be a for loop contribution to chi 1. And if you count the flavor choices, it works exactly the same way as the computing scalar self-energy. So it's same as a for loop propagator. Okay.
This
is the coupling. The coupling itself is finite. The change in the coupling is finite. Okay, so we add in the same sort of corrections. Okay, so we have to have this term here. This refers to the correction due to changing H hat. And there's also a counter term, which I'll draw like this, that you add to cancel the infinity. And it's the same as the for loop propagator. So what this means then is that it has this exact same topology as doing the chiral propagator. And so if I cancel the divergence of the anomalous dimension from the chiral propagator, I cancel the divergence and the contribution to the anomalous dimension of this operator. So that means then that I can compute the for loop anomalous dimension for this operator using what I know from n equal 4. Okay, so if I take this function for the chi 1, f1 g squared, it turns out this is what the function is. Okay, I told you it was algebraic. It's very simple algebraic. So you'd find that delta 4 is given by this, plus perhaps some transcendental piece that we haven't quite settled. But once we find what chi 1, 2, 1 is, then we'll know what chi 1 is, and then we'll know what the anomalous dimension is. Okay, so higher loops. So I was at lunch with Nicholas yesterday, and Nicholas said, there's no reason ever to compute 5-loop diagrams, but I'm going to do one. Well, I'll do a few, but it's just to make a point. Okay, so let's consider the 5-loop correction to anomalous dimension for a one-paired state. And this is what various 5-loop contributions would look like coming from this correction term. And basically, every single correction term I have, okay, I can map to a correction. So this one would map to this correction in the chiral propagator. All these will map down to here. Okay? And then we also have corrections coming from where we have a vertex going with the neighboring leg. Okay, it turns out actually these sum to 0, but that's not important here. Every one of these can map to one of these. So anyways, there's more graphs too, but they all sort of, every one of them maps to one thing in the chiral propagator. So again, at the 5-loop order, if we cancel the divergences in the anomalous dimensions, okay, in the in the chiral propagator, which is what we want to do to make sure it stays superconformal, then we cancel the divergences for these anomalous dimensions. So again, we can take what we know from the n equals four dilatation operator, and as it stands right now, we do not know what it is exactly in terms of chiral functions. But if this conjecture is right, then delta 5 is 896 times g to the 10th, plus maybe some transcendental piece, which we're not sure about yet. So in principle, this can sort of work. Now, actually, there's another reason why I'm showing this at five loops. Since you're at four loop order, you remember that we had to add a counter term. And once you, we had to add an infinite counter term. And once you start adding counter terms at four loop order, that means that there's some scheme dependence at five loop order. Okay? So by deciding how we're going to make the subtraction at four loops, okay, that will affect what we mean by delta H hat at five loop order. But this shows it doesn't matter. As long as we're consistent with our schemes, no matter what scheme we have, okay, the scheme dependence that shows up in the five loop order in your definition of the coupling does not matter as far as the anomalous dimension goes for these operators. Okay, so for my last bit, I just want to make a statement of this is going to be very short. So we said that we have this exponential growth in these models. We have this exponential growth of these delta equals zero states. So that would suggest that there's a finite Hagedorn temperature even at strong coupling. Now, we know there's one at weak coupling because we have an exponential growth of states in n equals 4. And at weak coupling, basically, the spectrum is almost the same for these models as n equals 4 because the couplings don't matter. Okay, it's just what matters is the field content. However, remember what a Hagedorn transition tells you. At a Hagedorn transition, basically what it's telling you is planarity breaks down. Okay, so the string picture is no longer correct. Okay. So if the planar picture is breaking down, that means then that the states we said had delta equals zero no longer have zero anomalous dimension. So it's actually not clear at all. In fact, I sort of doubt that there's going to be a sharp transition at this point. Okay, so to summarize, so we can basically compute the anomalous dimensions of many, many states to at least three loop order and four loops very soon in this cubic model. You can actually compute the wrapping correction, the first wrapping correction for these one pair states. It basically be read off directly from the Y system computation, because these guys, they broke up. If you go and look at their integrals that they have, okay, you'll see that at the G2L, they should have L integrals, right? L integrals, one's a chi1, one's a chi12, one's a chi123, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The chi1 is right there. You can read it off, and that tells you what the wrapping correction is for them. So then we can ask the question, do divergences cancel beyond five loops? Okay, once we go to six loops, what happens is that you can map many, many of the diagrams in the anomalous dimension calculation to the diagrams in the chiral propagator, but there's some left over in the anomalous dimension that don't seem to match with some that are left over in the chiral propagator. And so in order for them to match, there has to be some, you have to do lots of de-algebra and stuff like that, and we have not managed to do that yet. So we don't know if this will continue to work. And then we can ask, to what extent is this conjecture true about breaking up these supergraphs like this? So this is still work in progress. And basically, it would be very interesting. So there seems to be some magic, if you will, involved that I can't quite see directly is related to SU2/2, but maybe it is. I don't know. All right, thank you. Oh. So, thanks. But since we're in Canada.
Questions? So, is this deformation integrable?
Probably not, but it's probably is not. So I didn't actually talk about, I only went to paired states. So once you go to three states in a row, then things get interesting. So if I have, say, three states in a row, actually, let's suppose I have four states in a row. And then I have a bunch of alternating guys like this, and then alternating this way. Okay, once we have three in a row, there's a chiral vertex that does this. Okay, and so you can then have something like a vector coming out, a vector coming like this. Okay, and this is the analog of in the SU2/3 sector where an X, Y, and a Z can map to two fermions, or it could go through something like this. And so once it goes through something like this, what happens is you get a Y coming out. And you see what happens if you call this sort of this part here, if you call this part here, you have these four guys together. If you call the middle part here the center, then up here you have four Ys together, and the center has moved over a little bit. So what happens then is this thing can start moving along. Now, interestingly, the four in a row is actually simpler than three in a row, because what happens in three in a row is that, let's say I do something like this. Okay. So these three X's then, what can happen is that they can turn into, say, they can turn into a Y, Y, Y. And then if I pull the rest of them up, you see I have five Ys in a row. And then these three Ys can start moving off this way. And basically what you'll have is you'll have, the next time you'll have four Xs. And you have two Ys. And so what happens is the four Xs keep moving, changing the four Ys, blah, back and forth like that. And what you've done is you've left behind a pair. And the pair can't move until the pair is stuck there. It doesn't move. So in this full system where these things can move, I don't know. I sort of doubt it, but maybe it is. But you can, I haven't done it yet, but you can take, you can go and look and you can take the information from Nicholas's SU2/3 paper and you can figure out what, you know, this is basically a two-loop effect. You can figure out, you know, what the Hamiltonian is to have these pairs move, to have these groups of four move along and things like that.
Regarding the string dual, I remember there was some old work of Bernstein, Jezala, and Lee who were looking at Lee Strassel with rational values of the parameters of the, and they were mapping that to some string backgrounds with discrete torsions, with orbifolds with discrete torsion, and I was wondering if it could be something like that. Have you thought of it?
My impression was it was those. Well, I'm not sure, but I was thinking in the back of my mind. I thought those are not the same maps that you guys that you and Teresa have. Then. Oh yeah. I don't know. I can't say. I'll have to look.
If you have these three X's in a row, you should probably consider W's, right?
Yeah. No. So you can consider W. That's a good question. But the thing is that, okay, so the W's, this can map into W's. So let's say these mapped into a W's. I did take a particular background where it's alternating X, Y's. But two W's. I have three. Oh, sorry. Well, there are three here. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, those. No, they certainly exist as well. Yeah. So those are the W's. Okay. Yeah. No, those certainly exist as well. So you have to worry about those as well. Yeah.
So, let's pretend the conjecture is true to all orders and as strong as you want to make it. Is there then a more global statement you can make, so akin to like the superpotential does not renormalize, the statements that you can make in 2D theories?
That's a good question. One of the things I wrote down, one of the rules I said that these things were planar protected, was based, you can also translate into the statement that the superpotential is not renormalized. that I don't know. I, 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 I'm not sure if this is really a statement about graphs or is this a statement about physics. Yeah. That, I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that.
No more questions. Let's thank Joe again. Let me just make one more announcement, which I forgot to make in the very beginning. So for those who registered for the banquet,